The song is called Screen Door from Rich Mullins. 11 minutes after the hour, we're joined by Doug Greenwald from Preserving Bible Times. Doug coming to us from Columbia, Maryland, just outside Washington, D.C. And Doug, welcome. Good morning to you.
Morning, guys. Good to be back with you again.
I've got to apologize because I was talking about taking control of your own discipleship and kind of teasing the present. I forgot we were still in jail. We're still doing time today. We're going to be talking about Leavenworth and Doug's ministry experience there. Well, it was just, what, end of September, was it?
It was the last week in September on a Thursday afternoon and evening.
Now, this is kind of a whole new direction for Preserving Bible Times, isn't it? Now, this is several times you've been back to, and specifically the state of Kansas.
It all started in the state of Kansas, and we keep getting invited back to the state of Kansas. And so this is the third year now that we've spent some teaching time in different Kansas prison. This was our first federal experience, and we're already looking forward to next spring down in the greater Wichita area, where there's a couple of more state prisons down there that we're going to see what the Lord has in store for our ability to get in there and do some teaching on biblical context.
Might this be something? I'm sorry, go ahead, David.
Just digressing for a moment, when you go down to Kansas, do you see a lot of big signs that say Kathleen Sebelius is one of ours? And we think she's doing a wonderful job? I'm just curious.
I can't speak to that, but I've seen an awful lot of blank billboards, so it strikes me maybe they took something off.
Yeah, little mustaches on Kathleen all over the state there, maybe.
Okay. All right, just thought I'd ask.
Doug, I wanted to ask, if you're doing this in Kansas, and this is, you know, I can see the state system. You've been in the state system. Now you've been in Leavenworth, which is a federal penitentiary. Does your reputation spread throughout the whole system? Might you see yourself doing this in other states as well?
It's hard for me to answer that question. All of these things have sort of come up by Holy Spirit, spontaneous combustion. And I just keep getting little inklings about other possibilities. One I just heard a week or two ago, actually from my wife. She knows a woman whose son was in a pretty famous case here on the East Coast, whereby he got so enraged about a child molestation thing that was going on that he actually shot the molester in a parking lot and was sentenced to life imprisonment. And he's in a prison in Florida, supposedly just a wonderful person, just completely lost his cool in a specific situation. And he's a Christian. And he has started a very, very vibrant Christian ministry in one of the Florida prisons. Now, I don't know any more details than that, but I'm going to try to track that one down to see if maybe we could do something down there to help his ministry in the prison that he's in. So that's how these things come to the surface. They just sort of gurgle up. They just happen to show up on the radar screen, and one thing leads to another. So far, a lot of one thing leads to another has been going on in the state of Kansas, but we'll see what the Lord has in store.
Well, just kind of a related question here, but let's go back to Jesus' ministry. He was the champion of the poor, the downtrodden, the rejected. What did he have to say about prisons and people in jail?
Well, in his rescue manifesto in Luke 4, among other things, he said he had come to set the prisoners free. And that's a pretty wide-ranging statement there. That's prisoners of ignorance, prisoners of religious systems, prisoners of emotional oppression, prisoners who've been deprived of compassion and mercy by their society, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's a very wide-ranging statement that he made. And then he made something more specific that, you know, when you visit those in prison, you are doing it unto me. So he was very concerned about prisoners in specificity and the whole notion of being in prison in a very global sense.
I was just wondering if this was something that many, and I find no fault with visiting people in prison. I think it's a noble thing to do, an important thing to do. Although personally, I've never done it. Did we take something too literally that he said in these prison ministries? Are we doing it because Jesus told us to, or simply because it's the right thing to do?
Well, if Jesus told us to do it, isn't the same thing as the right thing to do?
Well, did he,
you can be a humanist and look at it, you know, disconnected from Jesus. But I think we need to visit the prisoners. And let me give you one very specific reason. What I've learned in the last several years visiting these various prisons is that prisoners come to Jesus in prison. And it's not uncommon to hear something along these lines: I had to go to prison to be set free. Mm. Another thing you may not think about, but in a lot of prisons, prisoners have a lot of time on their hands. Some prisoners have 5 hours a day of free time. And so the issue is, what are they going to do with that? And when we deal with new converts who come to Christ in prison, they, for a number of reasons, have a lot of zeal, and they want to start digging into things. There aren't a lot of spiritual directors and mentors around. There aren't churches necessarily that can guide them. And so they tend to go off on their own tangents. Last January, when I was at the Lansing State Prison in Kansas, I met several new Christians, new within the last year or two. One who went deep off into numerology, and one who went deep off into prophecy, and one who went deep off into end times. And so what I'm beginning to realize is that there is this zeal, there is this energy to dig into things. Wouldn't it be nice to channel that in certain directions? And so when we go in and teach the Bible in context and give them tools about how to engage the Bible in context, it's my hope that a lot of that zeal and energy will get channeled into digging into the Bible in context. And that's one reason why we try to leave a little mini library behind of proven classic contextual resources in the prison library, so that if prisoners really want to get into this Bible in context thing, they can do that. And as I often say to these enthusiastic new believers who've gone off in cul-de-sacs in their study, if it were up to me, I would just have you spend the next 3 years falling in love with Jesus and then find out what the Holy Spirit is asking you to dig into next. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of our Bible contextual work is done in the Gospels for exactly that reason. And so I'm beginning to sense and see that one of our roles there is not just to encourage Christian brothers in prison, and they truly are appreciative when you come from the outside to spend time with them, but also to channel some of that energy to dig into the scriptures in, I'm going to call it primary ways as opposed to secondary areas of interest.
Are there consequences for a believer, especially a new believer and an active believer in a prison environment that differs from the hazards or challenges out in the general population? I mean, do they face special problems by becoming believers within the prisons?
They really do, in a couple of different ways. First off, as soon as they start to change their behavior patterns to be more reflective of Christ-like behavior, they really get it. They get derision, they get ridicule, they get persecution in different forms from the, let's call it, the old neighborhood. You got a lot of gang activity in prison, and those are not friendly entities for spiritual development. And the thing I think that we don't appreciate is when you're in prison, basically there's very little places to hide. Mm-hmm. You know, we can go home and shut the door and lock the front door and not see anybody, but you can't do that in prison. So you're much more visible in that way. And so, yes, I think there is more persecution, overt and subtle, because of wanting to be a follower of Jesus. And what I learned at Leavenworth is there are 1,100 inmates there. On a typical Sunday morning, 100 of them will be in chapel. Of the 100, 25 will be in a weekly Bible study. And having talked with some of the brothers there, of the 25 who are in a weekly Bible study, there's about a dozen who I'm going to call hardcore Christians and followers of Jesus Christ. They even have given themselves a name. It's called the Soul Patrol. And they walk the hallways and the yard and praying for the prisoners, the inmates, the guards, the staff. and stopping inmates and asking what they can pray for them for. They're really zealots, if you will. And it was really delightful to find these dozen brothers. They were in both sessions of our Bible Alive seminar the day we were there. And they truly are the leaven in the Leavenworth loaf.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can see that as a natural development, I think, because in part that's for security. Now you've got a group of family members with you. It's kind of the positive side of the gang coin.
Yeah, but you can see the mathematics of that, 12 versus 1,790.
True. Well, hopefully your visit there is going to wind up in some growth in that particular family.
Well, you never know. I mean, you're there and then you're not there and you leave the spirit behind. But I think also what's really was fascinating to reflect on is how we even got there and what happened while we were there, because all prisons are different, all wardens are different in their receptivity, all chaplains are different in their impact and their emphasis. The audiovisual systems you encounter are vastly different. And when those gates shut, you have no idea what you're walking into, and you have no idea what adjustments you're suddenly going to have to make.
Are the chaplains necessarily Christian in prisons?
I would say, from my perspective, I mean, I've only had 3 or 4 data points. They certainly give every evidence of that.
But surely there are other faiths, and I can't imagine multiple chaplains in a prison for each possible spiritual direction that people could take.
Yeah, I think, I don't remember, but I think there are 12 or 13 different faiths in Leavenworth right now, and 2 chaplains. And part of the challenge of being a Christian chaplain, which the vast majority of them are, is they also have to serve the other faiths, you know, for their worship services and for their festivals and that sort of thing. So I would say it's really a challenge to be a chaplain in a system like that, when you have to serve so many differing constituencies, when the vast majority of those constituencies are not Christian at all.
Hmm. It would be that. What's the situation in Leavenworth specifically then? Because you know the people there. How did you get in contact with them?
Well, we were earlier this year in January, we were down in Lansing, Kansas, which is 10 miles south of Leavenworth, and we were doing 2 days of teaching there at the state prison in Lansing, both the maximum security campus and the minimum security campus. And when we finished our second day of teaching in the afternoon, it was like 3:30, and my host, who's from the outside and who tries to mentor in state prisons when and where he can, said to me, well, we got a half an hour here before the chaplain leaves at Leavenworth, typically. Do you want to see if we can run up there and catch him? So we hopped in the car and we got up there about 5 to 4, and indeed we're able to interact with chaplain. And it was a very brief conversation, and explored the possibility of bringing Bible Alive to Leavenworth, and talked about weekends, and basically learned that weekends are just a tough do for all kinds of reasons, but that maybe there would be a chance to do something during a weekday. And at that point, I handed one of our DVDs from Preserving Bible Times. It's a DVD called The Bible in the Land. It's aerial flyovers of Israel in low-level helicopters of Bible sites, and some information about Bible Live, and left. And 3 months later, I got a call from a couple of community Bible study fellowships in Kansas City, wondering if I would be their fall retreat speaker. And I said, sure. And that afforded the possibility to come out a couple days early and do something at Leavenworth. So I called the chaplain back up and said, here's what might be possible. And he thought about that and said, well, you know, I think I could arrange something for 2 hours on a Thursday afternoon and 2 hours on a Thursday evening. And I said, well, that's fine with me. It's a little less time than I usually get. But I said, let's book it. And so we did. And then about 3 months later, now we're getting to late summer, I'm starting to orient my thinking towards logistics to bring to the prison and my presentation there. And so I sent an email into the structure at Leavenworth and said, I assume I can bring my laptop computer in. And the answer was, no, can't do that. Well, I've got 12 PowerPoint presentations for Bible Live that are just image rich, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, well, that's no problem. I'll just carry in my 12 PowerPoints on my thumb drive and, you know, interface them with the computer system, the projection system there. That's fine. I said, no, you can't bring in a thumb drive. So I said, well, what can I bring in? Can I bring in the DVDs that I typically use in a Bible Live weekend? The answer was that, no, you can't bring in any DVDs. And I said, well, how can I get my presentation material into the prison? They said, well, you're limited to one PowerPoint. It can't be more than 15 megabytes. Well, every one of my images that I use, and I use maybe 100, are 2 to 3 megabytes. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that I'm already down to 5 images.
Yeah.
And so I had to make a decision. I went back into my 12 PowerPoints, and I stripped out all of the images. So now I'm just teaching with, you know, alphanumeric PowerPoint slides, but no visual. And they said I could send that in. So I tried to send it in to the IT person at the prison. Somehow,
yeah, we've lost Doug's audio here for just a second. We'll see if we can pause a moment and let Skype catch up with things here. Let me try it again, Doug. No, everybody, check your buttons. There's a mute button. It might have been hit by accident. Some of those headsets have those. I know that's happened in the past. Do we have you, Doug? No, we got video and no audio. Mm. Well, mid-sentence. I hate it when that happens here.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
I cut my video, but it doesn't seem to help.
I'll cut mine as well and see if that helps.
Okay. There's a loose connection between here and Washington, D.C.
I think so.
Gee, where have we ever heard that before?
Doug? I think Doug can hear us and we can't hear him. So,
yeah.
Doug, I'll tell you what, I'm going to disconnect and reconnect with you. And in the meantime, we'll play a little music here and then we'll see if we can reconnect. These are it's the second chapter of Acts. Okay, we managed to reconnect with Doug Greenwald, so I think what we'll do is see if we can pick up where we left off. And Doug was trying to get his materials into Leavenworth and limited to just a single PowerPoint presentation. And how did you get it there?
Well, we couldn't get it through by email, so I was granted an exception that I could bring in one DVD with that particular PowerPoint on it. And then they would have to virus scan it and test it and all that sort of thing. Mm. And so that's what I did. And we actually went through 2 levels of security clearance to get into the prison. And I had my DVD with me. And as we were walking to the prison chapel, all of the materials that I had sent in beforehand, I found out weren't yet cleared through the system to be given away as gifts to the inmates. And when I walked in the chapel, I realized I didn't have a computer. Are you still with me?
Yep, still with you. I'm just kind of stunned here. It's almost as if somebody didn't want this to happen.
Yeah, and it gets more interesting than that from here. But so at 12:45... I realize I don't have a computer for my lonely DVD with my one stripped-down PowerPoint in it. And there's some inmates are sitting in the front pews of the chapel, and they overhear this discussion, and they say, we know where there's a laptop. There's another Christian ministry over on the other campus. I think it was the minimum security campus. Maybe they'd lend it to us. And a couple of phone calls later, lo and behold, at 1:05, that laptop shows up. It's brought up to the front of the chapel. And we now have to interface this with the prison sound system and projection system. And a couple of inmates say, well, would you like us to do that for you? We know how to do that. And so they quickly got out of the couple of front rows and began plugging this thing together at the moment that a guard walks in. And unbeknownst to me, for prisoners are forbidden from touching any sort of computer equipment. So now we're like 3:01, about to kick off, and we have an incident on our hands. Mm.
And so more officials are summoned, and there's debate going on in the back of the chapel, and I can hear the chaplain saying, look, these guys came all the way from Washington, D.C. to do a special presentation for the inmates. You can't shut them down. And a couple of more minutes of discussion, and we are allowed to continue. So, okay. So now we've got the computer hooked up, but the VGA cord isn't long enough to reach my speaking lectern. So my traveling partner, the president of Preserving Bible Times, a guy named David, I said, David, can you come up here and hold the laptop on your lap, and every time I nod my head, hit the advance button? Well, none of us had ever done that before. You know, we were forbidden from downloading the PowerPoint presentation to the hard drive of the computer, which meant the computer had to continuously read it off of the DVD, which, if you've never done that, introduces about a 6 or 7 second delay between mm-hmm. when you push the button and when the image pops up. So now I'm calibrating the nod of my head 7 seconds ahead of the time when I really want the image to be up on the screen. No big deal, but, you know, just sort of indicative of the little barriers that were kept cropping up. We get to the 2 o'clock break, and lo and behold, there's another commotion in the back of the chapel. And the person from the other Christian ministry who had lent us the laptop decided he wanted to go home early today, and he wasn't going to be around that evening, so he wanted his laptop back.
Oh. It's starting to sound like government to me.
So once again, I hear the chaplain in the back say, these guys came all the way from Washington, D.C. to do a special presentation. You can't just shut them down. And so he calls the warden. And the warden gets into this and said, you know, what's going on, et cetera, et cetera. And the warden overrules the Christian ministry person, so at least we can keep the computer. Hmm. But the warden says, what's going on in the chapel anyway? And the chaplain says, well, we're doing something called Bible Alive, and inmates are being taught the Bible in context, and our speaker is flying them around Israel in a low-level helicopter, showing them biblical sites. And the warden says, really? Can I see that DVD when it's over? I'd like to show it to my family, too. So, you know, I'm just not smiling on my face, you know, situation under control, under heavenly control. So here we go again. And so we get through the afternoon. We end up at 3 o'clock, and to a person, got about 50 inmates in the room. The chaplain thought there'd be no more than 25. And almost to a man, they said, boy, we're coming back. We really enjoyed this. Appreciate it. I've now got 3 hours to spare. And before coming back to the prison, so David and I decide to go see the town of Leavenworth. Not a big town, sits up on the bluff there above the mighty Missouri River. It's maybe 4 blocks by 6 blocks. And we're going down 6th Street, and we had an early lunch, Coney Dog at Sonic, which didn't take us very far. So we thought we needed a little late afternoon treat, cookie and tea or something. And we see Sis's Cookie Cafe on 6th Street in Leavenworth. And so we go into Sis's Cafe. And this is a pretty, you know, Midwest, down-home, Americana sort of cafe where all over the walls are memorabilia. And a lot of it was Kansas University, the Jayhawks, and a lot of the Kansas stuff was basketball. And so since David and I, late in the afternoon, were the only people in Sis's little cookie cafe, we got to talking with her. And I said to her, you know, 49 years ago, I played in the NCAA Final Four right down the road here at the Kansas City Municipal Auditorium. And you would have thought that LeBron James just walked into Sis's cafe.
Your eyes lighting up, yeah.
So she grabs a menu, has me sign it, my name, my number, my year, my team, you know. And I think right now there was no room in the cafe, but somewhere on a wall in the men's bathroom at Sis's Cafe is my autographed menu of our time there.
It's too bad you didn't have your uni with you, you know. That's the kind of
pop up.
Yeah.
So we get back at 5:30, get cleared again through security. We're in the prison chapel at 5:30. We're kicking off at 6. And 6 o'clock comes, and there's not a soul in the chapel. And I'm thinking, what in the world has just happened? How could I have turned off every person in the room by what I said in the afternoon, that they didn't want to come back? Well, I discovered for some reason that night, the prison had a special dinner for the inmates that was going to lengthen the dinner hour by 45 minutes. Some of the prisoners, and there are four seatings, okay, so they don't all eat at once. Some of the prisoners figured this out, maneuvered themselves into the first sitting, ate fast, and got to the chapel at 6:15. About six or eight of them did. But obviously we didn't have a quorum, so we had to wait another half an hour. So we ended up talking with the prisoners, what was life like in prison in Leavenworth? And I already shared some of that information with you.
Mm-hmm.
By 6:45, we actually have about six or seven more inmates for the evening session, 57 pushing 60. We got kicked off at 6:45. The chaplain let me extend it to 8:15, so I was able to teach the leper and the calling of Levi, both of which I've learned are tremendously powerful passages for prisoners. They know what it's like to be a leper, and they know what it's like to be Levi, having made an incredibly bad decision in your life and paid an enormous cost. And it just really went well. And when we closed it up at 8:15, almost to a man, every prisoner lined up down the center row of the chapel. It was like a big wedding receiving line. And each one of them wanted to shake my hand, look me in the eye directly, and say something personally to me, which you never get in a church situation. But you almost always do in a prison situation, because they're just so appreciative of someone who comes to spend some time with them and to share some things with them, particularly from an equipping perspective. So we left Leavenworth at about 8:30 and looked back on what seemed to be, in through the rearview mirror, a pretty remarkable day that was filled with barrier after barrier, constraint after constraint, and somehow the Lord alleviated all of those things, and we were able to finish what we began.
That's an incredible story. Just having got there, you'd have to believe it was gonna happen in one way or another, that you wouldn't, it wouldn't be cut short, wouldn't be short-circuited by circumstance, and certainly it wasn't. Things worked out probably just the way they were supposed to. You know, I get this overriding notion that we're not alone in this. I'm saying that kind of not from a biblical perspective, because I know what the Bible says about the presence of the Holy Spirit and why He's here and what He does, but just from a human perspective, you gotta feel that there's this unseen hand paving the way for you in this.
Oh, there is no question. And one of the realizations I've been having here lately is reflecting on Sunday mornings in churches. You know, it's one thing to teach a sermon on the sovereignty of God, and I'm sure that would be helpful for a lot of people, but it's entirely a different situation to bring someone and put them in the pulpit and have them share a 30-minute story or whatever I just did here about the reality of some aspect in your life where you see the sovereign hand of God at work a dozen times in one day, you know, because people remember narratives much better than they remember sermons. And I think if we would commingle sermons and powerful narratives from the lives of the congregants in our respective churches, that might have a more powerful, lasting, memorable impact than just sermons alone.
But just your experience here, this must leave you with a feeling that you were in the right place at the right time doing what you were supposed to do. And are you inclined to pursue a future down that path? I'm really curious to know if Preserving Bible Times is going to be active heavily in prison ministry. I think this is just a wonderful turn of events here.
Well, next spring, we're going to be in the Wichita, Kansas area on Palm Sunday weekend,
And I've already had some overtures about coming down early there and maybe doing a day at the El Dorado State Prison and also one in Hutchinson, Kansas. That prison is known as the Hutch in Hutchinson, Kansas. Mm-hmm. It's also known as the Gladiator School. Meaning, if you're not a gladiator when you enter that place, you might not survive it. And so it's the toughest prison in the Kansas State system. And I'm already intrigued if the Lord is going to open those doors next spring for us to spend a day at the Hutch, bringing the compassion and mercy of Jesus to the toughest prison in the system. We'll see what the Lord has in store.
You know, and I can't help but wonder, I'm just thinking technically now, if I know you've got a new website brewing. It's going to be up in a few months. If some of these presentations were available to you on the website, if with all these restrictions on computers and thumb drives and technology, which is understandable in prisons, if you couldn't go there, use their system and simply go to your website and present much the same information, is that a possibility?
I don't even know what the rules are in the federal prison system about prisoners being able to use laptops, let's say, in the prison library. I'm just not...
You know, what I'm talking just about for your presentation, this might be a way around all those other restrictions. All you would need is one computer and an internet connection, of course, and that might be an issue. Anyway, it's worth thinking about. You'll have that technology built into your website.
Well, we'll certainly ponder that. My presentations are technically difficult because I'm always fusing together photographs, reconstructions, and video on an ongoing basis, interspersed between narratives. And so the guys that work for me have to do an awful lot of editing. And the last time we tried one of this, you know, it was about $8,000 worth of editing. There's some issues there.
There are indeed. Doug Greenwald is the Senior Teaching Fellow and Executive Director of Preserving Bible Times. It's a ministry based near Washington, D.C., the precise location, Columbia, Maryland. And the website is preservingbibletimes.org. It's a good place to go. When will the new website be up? Can you guess? Can you give us an estimate?
I'm hoping by the first of the year.
Okay. Well, there's one there now, and it's a useful one, and you'll find it full of useful resources for your church and small groups and Bible studies. And we'll look forward to that new website. And Doug, I'll look forward to chatting with you again next Wednesday.
And okay, guys. Thanks again.
And appreciate you all. As always, be blessed. Have a good week. And we turn to music now on a Broken Road Radio Wednesday morning from Moya Brennan.